Our next speaker is Peter Kovács. He graduated at Eötvös University in the topic of lattice gauge theory. And then he moved to our institute where he works on effective models of QCD. And he will talk about neutron stars this time.
Okay, so thank you, Zoltán, for the introduction. So I would like to talk about inner structure of neutron stars. Since the time is running out towards the lunch, so that I would like to keep my time. So that is, I would like to give some introduction about the neutron stars itself. And then I would like to highlight some of our results, what we are doing in the Wigner about the inner structure of neutron stars. So the first thing is, I start with the so-called pulsars, which was discovered in 1967 by Hewish and Bell. And actually, initially it was called the naming, because there is always some naming of object, the stellar object. So I mean the object in the universe, and the initial naming was LGM, as little green man, because they thought that this is some kind of some the signals. Periodic signals. So they thought that this is some extraterrestrial intelligence. But after they realized that there are other these kind of sources, then they dropped this idea. So then. After the naming pulsars was found out, and actually, so what is this? That these are some electromagnetically emitting neutron stars. So after some time, they connected this, because they already knew that there are things like supernova explosions, and they connected that in the supernova explosion it can form such neutron stars that they are fastly rotating, and if the cone where there is the magnetic line which are coming out from these neutron stars, it's going toward the Earth, so we can detect them, these kind of neutron stars are called pulsars, so they can emit in X-rays or in gamma or in visible range, so they are formed in supernova explosions if the mass is quite large, so it's 10 to 25 solar masses, and above that there are the black hole formations, and they are densest known matter in the universe, so they are 1 cubic centimeter around 10 to the power of 12 kilograms, which are really, really dense. So this means that they are so tightly packed together that the strong interaction plays a very important role. So they are like a very giant nucleus. So they are the currently, we know that the mass is around, it's from 1.2 to 2.3 solar masses, and its radius is from 10 to 14 kilometers. Okay, and there are different kind of neutron stars, so there are the pulsars, which I mentioned. There are magnetars, which has much larger magnetic. All of them has some, not all of them, but usually they have some magnetic field. The magnetars are very, they have 1,000 times larger magnetic field than the usual pulsars. And there are such things which are called pulsars and magnetars, so they are pulsating and magnetars as well. So I'm not going to detail that, and currently we see around 3,000 such neutron stars. Okay, and there are the what is inside is still unknown, so that's why there are lots of studies about that, and which I'm going to talk about is the so-called hybrid stars, when the density is so large, then there is a quark core inside the star. So because I don't forgot to mention that as we go inside, of course, the density increases as we go inside the star. Okay, so how we can measure this, just very quickly. So there are mass measurements. So these are binary. If there is a pulsar in a binary system, then from the Doppler shift, it is possible to tell mass. And another recently started, there is a very nice measurement called NICER, actually, which measure the radius of some of the pulsars. And this is done by profile analysis of the hotspot. The hotspot where this electromagnetic field comes out. So there is this radiation of protons and electrons and some charged particles, and they can analyze that how it rotates, and from that from this profile they can calculate the radius of the star. Another important thing is so-called tidal deformability, as the two let's say the binary system, one of them can be a neutron star, the other one can be a neutron star or a white dwarf, or even it can be that the other one is a black hole, so all of them can be possible. But if we assume that both of them are neutron stars, then when they goes around each other, then there is a tidal deformability, the stars are deformed, and this change the gravitational wave signal, so there will be some phase shift. And this tidal deformativity can be measured. So this gives some information that if you compress how the matter of the star vibrates, and this also can be measured. So this is the mass distribution of some of the known stars. So this is somehow around 1.2 solar masses. So 1.3 solar masses, right? And the one very important thing on this figure that not some time ago it was discovered that there are neutron stars which has masses larger than 2 times the solar mass. This is very important because this ruled out lots of theoretical models because they couldn't reach such a high. Then I will show how this is how we can say something about the masses and the radius. So very quickly about the structure of a compact star. So we start there is some crust here, and then some core and some so outer core and the inner core, and it starts from the iron at the outer layer, and as we go inside and the density increases, there are different materials. So I mean, there are just neutrons, protons, and electrons inside. And as we go inside and the density increases, there are various possibilities which can be inside. So one of the possibilities which we investigate is called the hybrid stars, and these are quark matter inside the core, but there are other possibilities as well. So in any way, the matter inside is driven by the strong interaction. So we should know the phase diagram of the strong interaction and around this axis, because I forgot to say that a neutron star is formed, it cools down very quickly, and basically, we are around on this axis. So when the temperature is zero, but of course the temperature is not zero, it's in the keV range, but compared to this 100 MeV is negligible. So that's why. So what we know about this envisaged phase diagram, we know basically what we know is around this axis, which is, you know, quite sure from, but it's also from lattice QCD from experimental point of view, we don't know this phase diagram. There are much effort to search for this critical endpoint, because now we think that there is a crossover type of phase transition. So here the normal matter, and it goes through the quark gluon plasma, and we assume at least lots of model it comes out that there should be a critical point from this. There is a first order phase transition between the hadronic matter and the scalar plasma. And there are lots of theoretical studies, but in experiments, we don't know anything at the moment. Along these lines, we can use these so-called effective models of QCD, which share the same global symmetries as QCD, but that use quarks and gluons, but use mesons instead. And we are working with this kind of effective models. And I come to that point, but first, how we can connect the strong ring interacting matter and the theory of strong ring interacting matter with the what we can measure, the masses and the radius of the stars. And this is through the special solution of the Einstein's equation. If we take a spherical symmetric case and the homogeneous matter, then we end up with this Tolman-Oppenheimer-Volkov equation, which is here, then there is the pressure and the energy density of the matter at a given radius. So if we know the pressure as the energy, actually what we should know is the pressure as the function of the energy density. So this is called the equation of state. Then we can integrate out this equation. And how we do that, we choose some central density, and this is integrated out until we reach the zero pressure, where that is the edge of the star. So when the star, and then when we get, we know the mass and the radius of that given star. And if we do this for different central energies, then we end up with the so-called MR curve. So this is one MR curve, and this has some maximum value. Once we reach this maximum value, then this part is not stable anymore, but these configurations are possible. And so there are lots of models, and you can see here many, many such MR curves for the different models. And the experiments choose from that which one is valid. So we should restrict such a model with the neutron stars observation. Okay. And in case of a hybrid star, which I thought then which I'm going to talk about, that we imagine that at density there are some hadronic, and for high density there are some quark matter, and that is across some crossover region. So we have models in this region, the hadronic region, and we have some models in the quark region, but they are two separate models. So we don't have a unified model in this sense, because how the hadrons from the quarks, the hadrons are formed within the fundamental theory, I mean, within QCD, is not known. So that's why we take some hadronic models and take some quark models, and we would like to match them somehow in the level of the pressure. And how we, so what are the two ingredients? So one of them is hadron part. So it's not, we take this basically from the literature. So there are many, many researchers who are working on them, that what are the hadronic equation of state. So there are different kind of equations. So there are some steeper and less steeper. I mean, the curvature of the steepness of the phi epsilon curve. And we connect our model, because we are in the quark side, which that we can calculate through the interpolation of the energy density as a function of the normal baryonic density. And we assume some polynomial and connect them with the quark equation of state. And then, of course, we have some parameters which we can change, that what is the region, this region which I showed earlier. So this, how large is the crossover region? How large is this crossover region, or where is this region starts and ends? And there are other parameters of the fourth model, for instance, the vector coupling, which is a very important parameter, or for the there is another one which is called the sigma mass of the model. So the other part which we are working on basically is the quark part of the equation of state. And so we use a kind of linear sigma model or a quark meso model. And there are different things. So the very important thing that we have different several condensates. So we have scalar condensates and vector condensates in our model. We assume beta equilibrium, and we have some free electron gas, which is added. I forgot to mention that there is always some in the neutron side. Usually there are some protons and there are some electrons as well. So it is on top of the beta equilibrium, it is there is charge neutrality, which we assume. And because of these condensates, it's a very interesting thing that the chemical potentials are modified such that there will be some this vector condensate comes into the expression of the chemical potential. And after that, we use that to calculate the grand potential. And the if we the field equations which is used to calculate the P epsilon curves are such that as the derivative of the grand potential condensates, we get a coupled equations. So in this case, five equations. And if we solve them, then we can have the P epsilon curve, which we done, then we can put back to the top equation and get this MR curves. So that's what we usually do. And of course, we have to connect also with the hadronic part of the equation. And this is just to show that we have some kind of Lagrangian, and this is based on the chiral symmetry. So I'm U C left cross U three right symmetry, and there are some breaking terms as well. And inside this Lagrangian, we have different particle nonets. So maybe the most known is the pions and kaons and eta and eta prime. So this is the so-called pseudoscalar net. But we have some other parts as well. We have some scalar parts and vectors and scalar vectors. So these are put together in the model and in a spontaneous symmetry breaking theory. And then we can calculate the masses and calculate decay width. And with this, of course, there is one other important thing that in the Lagrangian, of course, we have some free parameters. And this is matched using the particle data group data that we know the masses of different mesons. So we calculate the mesons masses and decay width in our model, then take the values from the PDG, and there is some matching mechanism, a chi-square fit, and then we have the parameters. And after we have a parameters at zero temperature and zero chemical potential, then we can go to finite chemical potentials with that. Okay, there is only one figure because we use this model over. So when we investigating neutron stars, then we are at zero temperature, at finite chemical potential, but we also use this model at zero chemical potential and finite temperature. And this is some matching that how we compared our model to lattice results. So these are lattice results, which the lattice use few QCD. So this is how we compare to them. So in some quantities, we agree quite well. And but on the lattice, we cannot go to large chemical potentials, but in the effective model, we can. So this is, but there is some comparison at finite temperature, which we can do. Okay, and then how much time do I have?
8 seconds.
Okay, so what we can do when we investigated our equations and then solve them, as I mentioned, here we have some parameterization, but not all of the parameterization give a good result. Because 8 seconds, you mean second?
8 seconds. So it was, okay. Your time is up. Yeah, so okay, please then, conclude.
Okay, then I skip this. So I just want to, would like to show one result that we also use this to apply a so-called Bayesian analysis to compare with the data actually coming from the astrophysical measurements, like this, there are some maximum lower limits on the maximum mass for these nicer measurements and can combine and use the Bayes theorem to restrict our parameters. So the parameters is theta, and what we can get is the following figure. So there are different MR curves, and if we apply more and more measurements, then this area shrinks, means that fewer and fewer MR curves are good with these measurements. And what is shown here also that that this region, this small region, there are the stars which have quark core. Okay, then I thank you.
Thank you very much. Maybe one question. If no, then let's thank all the speakers of this session. Thank you.